from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
To the team, the Houston Texans that are here. Man, I hope you guys really take this in, enjoy it, cherish it, because one day, one of you guys will be standing up here, man. D'Amico, I love you, brother. I appreciate you.
Okay, so that was Andre saluting the current Texans team. Text message. Were y'all disappointed that they never showed D'Amico in the current Texans team? It was such a cool story. I'm assuming the cool story being that they were all there for it and they never showed them on camera. My hypothesis on this, that salute to the Texans team came after the telestrator went out for Andre Johnson. And Andre said that the telestrator went out in the middle of his speech. There was a long pause, after which he thanked his mom. People construed that pause as collecting his emotions, which he may have well have been doing as well. But the telestrator went out in that moment. So there was also a functional pause to go, okay, what do I do here now? And Andre handled it great. He was much more off the cuff in the second half of the speech. My guess is that part of being off the cuff was maybe going a little out of order with who he was thanking. And the you got to imagine, you got to keep in mind, the producers who all day long were batting practically 1,000 with putting the camera feed onto the person or people that the speech giver was talking about, clearly they had copies of the speech with cameras ready to go. If the telestrator goes out and a guy just starts speaking spontaneously off the cuff, they were probably looking at the order going, all right, well, up next, he's going to thank his sister, April. And, you know, then, you know, he ends up thanking the Texans team, and now they've got to go finding him. They don't have time to find D'Amico and the team. So probably a little too inside there, but that's why. Like, if you're upset about it, well, I don't think that it was any intent.
Well, because especially, you know, TV people being who they know what they're doing. A chance to show C.J. Stroud or something. Because when they showed, when he referenced his former teammates, when Andre referenced his former teammates, they had J.J. Watt for a good amount of time. Then they showed the group of former teammates.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, I think you're exactly right. They probably, they definitely would have dialed in on D'Amico, and they definitely would have dialed on when he talked about the current team and guys that might be in the Hall of Fame someday. They would have been right in on C.J. Stroud.
Is that who popped into your brain immediately when he said one of you is going to be in here someday?
Yeah, the quick scan was, for one, I don't think, Danielle Hunter's not really on pace to be in the Hall of Fame.
No.
He's in the Hall of very, very good and under-recognized, I think. But C.J. Stroud, and I didn't think of Stephon Diggs because I don't yet think of him as an actual Texan yet until I see him in a Texans game
he's
uniform.
He's wild, I know.
Yeah, and Will Anderson.
It's early.
It's a shorter leap of imagination for C.J. Stroud than it is Will Anderson right now.
Sure.
Because C.J. showed enough in his rookie year already, I think that, all right, if he stays healthy and he continues to have offensive coordinators with whom he works well, because I think at some point Bobby Slowick's going to get a head coaching opportunity.
Yes.
That's a little bit more attainable right now. Will, there's There's still growth that we need to see with Will.
Agreed. Andre Johnson was on the NFL Network over the weekend, and they asked him, hey, man, you're around the team a lot. Tell us your thoughts on C.J. Stroud.
For me, it's not a surprise. I remember first time meeting C.J. Right after he got drafted. I always go meet the new guys that they bring in, and, you know, it was just something about him. He's just different. You know, he's very, very, very mature. You would think he's played this game for – he's not the rookie. You would think he played for a number of years. So what he's done, it doesn't really surprise me. And he's a great leader. I mean, he came in right away and earned the team's respect. So man, I'm just looking forward to it.
I think him meeting – I remember I was doing the draft broadcast on the second night. And I remember walking into the cafeteria because I was doing it from the stadium with Mark and John. And I remember walking into the cafeteria and seeing CJ and Will sitting down with Andre and I think Travis Johnson and somebody else. But I remember just seeing Andre sitting with those two guys. And I was like, well, that is a good influence on these guys. Yeah.
Yes.
It was really, and they were just sitting at the table chatting, you know. It was cool. And like to see Andre as involved with the current team as he is, and with those guys, like, you know, Will's, or CJ especially, he's a football junkie. Like, he's a football nerd. He's just, from the time he was young, he just sits around watching quarterbacks and football teams on YouTube. That's how he learned to have such a good throw. Despite not having the high-priced, fancy tutors that guys like Bryce Young had, CJ had the best throwing mechanics of the entire lot that year in the draft class because he's such a football junkie. I bet CJ just loves talking to Andre. Just,
I bet he
just
does, too.
Nuts and bolts, yes. X's and O's, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I 100% agree with you on that. So that was Andre on CJ Stroud. CJ was actually on a podcast the last few days called the Sport and Spectrum podcast. I wasn't familiar with it till I saw these cuts, some of which you're about to hear from CJ Stroud. I think the sense that I get, Seth, is it's a podcast that combines sports and faith. Is the sense that I get just based on the clips that I've seen from CJ and the host that he was talking to and the vast majority of the topics that's bubbled to the surface. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but the cuts that have bubbled to the surface seem to blend those two. But the thing that CJ Stroud's trying to really work on, among many things this offseason, trying to work on his potty mouth, man.
I don't know. I was watching an interview that I was doing a couple of days ago, and I'm like, man, like, why am I saying this or I'm saying that? Like, that's not even me. Like, I don't know where. And then what he was saying is like, man, sometimes like the issue isn't necessarily the issue. It's the emotion that comes with it.
Yeah. So,
like when you get emotional about something, like when I get emotional about like football, I'm like, I'm just feeling the emotion that I get on the field. I like start to like play the game or like feed into the profanity, you know? And I'm like, I caught it. And I'm like, hold on, like this isn't right. You know what I mean? And I remember watching a TikTok. I get like a lot of my like faith videos on TikTok. And I remember watching a certain guy. He was in prison for like 20 something years. And that was the thing that he learned while he was in prison. He was like, man, like there was guys who I would try to like lead to Christ, but they're like, man, like you talk like I do. And he was like, they wouldn't follow me after like that type of leadership. I got to be better. So that's how I just want to get better.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it kind of goes, it's a fine line to walk though, too, when, you know, CJ is very much one of the guys, but he also has, you know, his personal life and his faith and everything else to where I he's probably when he's talking about, you know, if he was watching and he saw it as a podcast environment.
100%.
You know,
he took the words right out of my mouth.
You're just one of the guys and you forget that you forget it's being recorded. You forget that it's on camera.
Yes.
And, I mean, they've done studies on this. There's a different part of your brain that you tap into when you start using curse words. It's really fascinating when you get into all the, like, different areas of your brain are activated and everything. So it's one of those small things, though, that I think in minding your language, you have to have a level of discipline and restraint that flows over into other parts of your life. And it's one of those, like, it's a hygiene matter almost, you know.
Yeah.
It's a little thing that actually has outsized effects in a lot of ways. And it probably just speaks to CJ wanting to do the right thing all the time, which is good. And he also, like, he's, Ohio State is one thing. But it's a different level in the NFL in terms of your influence on young people, mm-hmm. especially like, you know, young people nationwide. He probably feels that responsibility now.
Well, when you, especially I would imagine when you're open about your faith like he is, you know, there's yeah. a lot of people yeah. that follow yeah. him for that reason.
Yeah.
And he wants to be true to that. Here's one more from CJ Stroud. Again, this is the Sport and Spectrum podcast. This is a good one, man. Something else he's trying to improve at? People pleasing and maybe getting better at discerning when to people please.
One of the things that I definitely need to get better at is just people pleasing. I think something that I just try to be a nice dude, like, you know, like just try to do what my parents have raised me to be, you know, like respectful yeah. young man. And I think a lot of people can take that and they can run with it. And I've been praying for discernment on like who to give that to, who not to, like protecting my peace, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because I think like I can run dry and I don't want to ever meet somebody or like, you know, have a conversation with one person and somebody used 80% of my energy in a day and I only give them that 20%. That's not enough. You know, I want to be able to discern through that. And that was one thing that I feel like last year, like just in a new role, in a new environment, a new like league, like it was just a lot of people like picking at me. And now I kind of just want to be able to discern like who I should, you know, give my all to.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Especially when social media is involved.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, man, I'm watching the Simone Biles documentary slowly. And it's really good. It's really good. The one thing, though, that I keep seeing is, man, these mentions, you know, these things that people say on the internet to Simone Biles, especially after she got the twisties in the 2020 Olympics, that are just so just callous and cruel and awful. And I mean, it's I don't know what to say to somebody like Simone Biles, because, you know, for somebody like her, that's part of her livelihood, too. But just figuring out a way to filter some of that out, because you're never going to you see this with athletes all the time. They don't get that you're never going to win that battle. There's always going to be ugliness on the internet. There's always going to be viciousness and toxicity on social media, and you're never going to win that battle. So you got to figure out a way to tune it out, because it's almost like the more somebody claims they don't care about it, the more they probably do really care about it. It affects you. It just, it's impossible. Even if 99 comments don't affect you, there's going to be that one. And then all of a sudden you're making a decision based on some nameless, faceless person on the internet in your life. It's really hard to do.
That's really interesting. Like, and I, as I'm going back through that cut from CJ in my head, I could totally see that, what you're talking about being the people pleasing he's talking about. It's interesting, because when I heard that, I started thinking about maybe him saying yes to a lot of things.
That too. Yeah, that too. You know? I think it's all that.
Yes.
It's right. It, especially when you want to do with charity's a hard one, you know?
Yeah.
Like the more famous you get as an athlete, the more people want you to do nice things, and you'd love to do every single one of them, but it turns into you, like, for all those guys who have done such incredible work with charities, they've had to say no to so many other opportunities.
Yes.
And it eats at those guys. It's really, really hard. Yeah, I mean, like, you just, yeah. So it's that's where having that support staff and having a system of gatekeepers really comes in.
That's a relatable one. And I'm not comparing myself to CJ Stroud, but in the business that you and I are in, we get asked to do a lot of things. You know, whether it's for the company or for a charity yeah. or for a listener, we have a lot of people asking us stuff. And that was honestly like when I write down my things going into a year that I'm trying to get better at, because I do that.
Yeah.
Coming into this year, one of the things I wrote down was get better at saying no to things, you know, yeah. like get better yeah. at saying no. Because there was a weekend last year, it was right around this time, because it was during training camp when we're super busy. And it was just like a period of like 6 days that I had stuff going, like from the time you and I started the show till nighttime. And I, like 3 days in, I guess outwardly I was in a really bad mood, because Amy was like, man, what's wrong? Like, so what's eating at you? And I'm like, I think it's because these 6 days are super busy, and like none of it is for me. Like yeah, at the end yeah. of like these 6 days, like I've accomplished, and I'm all for doing stuff for other people, but like that was my tipping point for me individually last year, was yeah. that period of time. So I listened to that one and I'm like, I get it for CJ. It's like what I'm talking about for me times 1,000, but that's a good one. I like that one.
You know, one thing too, sometimes a barrier to saying no is that you think you have to have an excuse
yeah.
When you don't. You can just say, no, I can't do it. And if somebody presses you for an excuse, that's their social faux pas, not yours. You know, like that's all. No, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I've got something else. That something else might be that you just need to sit at home and relax.
Yes.
But it's nobody else's business what your conflict is.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people struggle with that part of it. Just remember, okay, you're a good person. You like to do nice things. You're not going to do this. And if they press you for a reason, that's on them. That's that's a bastard of a person. They're not bastards, but in that moment, like, no, you don't owe it to them to tell them why.
Compliment for you on the text page, Seth. I can tell you look slimmer on your YouTube channel. Yep, I think you do. There are folks also wanting to know how you ration out the 1,200 calories for three meals a day.
Okay. It's not a look.
You You missed it. Seth's been on a 1,200 calorie.
1,200 to 1,800.
Okay.
1,200 to 1,800 calories a day. It depends, and I go a lot by feel. Though, okay, the first thing. Now, this is the hard part. There's no easy way on this. I prepped for it by doing, I think it was about 6 to 9 months of an hour of day of like slow, low intensity cardio, where my heart rate doesn't get above 115 or so, like really low intense. It takes a lot of mental toughness to like work out without it feeling like a workout.
Yeah.
Like you want to like start sweating and breathing more. Mm-hmm. Basically to teach my body to just be more metabolically flexible, that I can burn fat more, just more efficiently, so that I don't get hunger pains so drastically and that I don't feel wiped out, you know? And I didn't go like super low carb or anything. I just wanted to get my body better at burning fat. And once I felt like I got there, then I started like really just drastically reducing how much food I eat. And I can tell when I'm hungry, but I don't feel like I've got to eat now. I don't get like hypoglycemic. And then it's just, so it's like, it's Greek yogurt, it's fruit and vegetables, and what else do I eat? I think that's pretty much, tuna.
Yeah.
And like real lower, you know, low fat proteins.
Do you have a time window where you start eating and stop eating during the day?
No, I don't. I go all by feel. And like sometimes, a lot of the times I just eat one meal a day. So that if I eat like 1,500 calories in a day, it's a really gratifying meal. I feel like way too full afterwards. But if I start to feel kind of wiped out, I eat 3,000 calories in a day. I'll have a limit of 3,000. I usually don't even get to I'll allow myself 3,000, but I don't get to it because I just don't get as gnawingly hungry. I've got plenty of fat left. I've got plenty of fat on my body to use as a fuel.
Not as much as you used to, man.
But no, when I get to that point, and I'm just doing it by my only motivator is getting my blood pressure lower.
There you go.
I'm monitoring my weight, but that's not what I just check. I don't check it every day. I just check my blood pressure. Like when I hit 120 over 80, it felt like the first time I'd benched 400.
Yeah.
I was like, holy crap, I didn't think that was possible.
Good for you, man.
So now I'm chasing 110 over 70.
Look at
baby.
You. Look at
yeah.
you. Yeah. Oh, man, the chase for 110 over 70. Should post it on social media, the tracking of it. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Hall of Fame game last Thursday. We gave our initial reactions, which for me and Seth at 6 a.m. is kind of a rapid fire what we saw in the game. We both had a chance to rewatch things, and I think we both saw some good and bad. I know there's a couple things that we want to have back and maybe adjust our assessment of here. We will do that, give you some leftovers from the Hall of Fame game coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Texans are big box office, man. I'm looking up at the TV in the studio here, NFL Network. Steve Wyche and Brian Baldinger, where are they today? Oh, they're in Chagrin Falls, Ohio at Texans practice. Hey, which of the games that are on Friday night in the preseason did the NFL choose to put on the NFL Network at 7 o'clock Eastern time? Oh, that would be the Houston Texans and the Pittsburgh Steelers. They chose that one out of all of them.
What day is it?
That's on Friday, Seth. Yeah, okay. You and I are doing pregame starting at 3 o'clock, I believe.
Well, that puts a hamper on my afternoon. Huh. What the hell? All right. Friday night game. What time does it start?
It starts at 7 o'clock Eastern time. Six o'clock Houston time.
Okay. Yep. That's not bad.
No.
That was a little bit later start than I would have preferred. I was kind of glad that Mother Nature and the ghost of George Halas decided to rain that game out.
I kind of was too.
Yeah, they were like, hey, George Halas came through in the clutch and secured the victory late in the third quarter. I saw a lot of people complaining about, wussiness and stuff and them canceling that game. That was all about people saying, like, it's a preseason game. No, we're not going to sit around for 2 hours. If that was a regular season game, they would have waited for the Lightning to blow by.
Oh, for sure.
And resumed play. It was late in the third quarter of a preseason game.
That was getting canceled the second the Lightning rolled in. There were plenty of people up here in the studio, because I was waiting to do postgame, that are like, well, we got to sit tight. They may start the game up again, like non-sports people. And I'm like, no, they're getting in all their commercials, teasing that the game might come back on. There's no chance they're starting a game that a bunch of fourth and fifth stringers are going to go out there and maybe get struck by lightning in the fourth quarter. Settle
then
down.
We're going to have to have a whole debate about whether they should cancel the next week of preseason play or something.
Right. Exactly. Now, there were three quarters almost of that game that we did get to see. And you and I gave our takes on it on Friday of last week. You were, I would say that largely Texan fans were really excited about Davis Mills, just based purely on the statistics and the fact that he generated two scoring drives.
Yeah.
You went a little deeper on your analysis in terms of the qualities of the throws, how bad the bad plays were, but you had a chance to rewatch the game this weekend. Where do you land now, Monday at 9:29 a.m.?
I will say, like, I'm not going to be bubbling over with enthusiasm, but I do think that I got to acknowledge that it was a really good performance by Davis Mills. And I think I was harping on the negatives too much just because of the old simple confirmation bias. You know, I've got my view of Davis Mills, and as soon as he did some negative things, especially on that first, I mean, he had inaccurate throw to Xavier Hutchinson. He had the weird play to Skoranek on that first drive, and I ignored some of the really good things he did, which was on the sum total of the evening, he was making good decisions. He was executing the offense first and foremost, and they were running a lot of what this offense wants to do. There's pre-snap motion every play. He went to his second and or third read at least a couple times in the game. So I was harping too much on the negative and not remembering that, like, okay, yeah, there is no perfect football performance. I can't look at that one performance as confirmation that he's a different guy, but it was a very promising performance. So I think being in this offense for the second straight year, which is the first time that he's had this, maybe brought out the better version of Davis Mills.
Yeah.
He's going against backups, but he was also throwing to backups.
That last part you touched on there, like the 2 year in a row thing, I think about guys like Nico and Brevin Jordan, Charlie Heck, Davis Mills, like guys who have been here through all of the changes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
yeah.
All of the changes. This is the first offseason and preseason that any of these guys have had with the same cast of characters, and they've been in the league since at least 2021.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like that's, you know what you can't just dance past that, you know?
This is what I think about a lot is when I came into the league in 1997. The Jaguars. I got drafted by the Jaguars, and the Jaguars had been the AFC Championship the year before.
Yeah.
They and the Panthers were everybody's darling. Is this team that, oh my gosh, I can't believe they were as good as they were. And I can specifically remember kind of the conversations in the locker room being very, very positive and optimistic and almost self-congratulatory. And that's what I worry about, because that ended up being, you know, they did not follow up with as good a performance in 1997 or 98, really. 99 was when we went to the AFC Championship again.
Yeah.
It went 14-2 in the regular season.
Yep.
Damn, Jeff Fisher. And it was, but like that's like a little part of my brain, kind of the same way, Sean, you and I are, now that we've lived through a few financial booms and busts.
Yeah.
You know, you become the guy. You become the guy easy. In the back of the room that's like, hey, guys, just easy, all right? It's not everything. It's if it's too good to be true, et cetera, et cetera. There is that crotchety old man in me a little bit. Like, all right, I hope these guys aren't drinking the Kool-Aid too hard and too fast that they get a bellyache.
Do you, I have the same concern you do. Everything that I've heard from the guys that really matter on this team, like the Compass, the tone setter guys, from D'Amico to CJ, to Will Anderson, to Stephon Diggs.
Right.
Don't put
Stephon
the card
Diggs can be that grumpy old man because he's been on the team that's been knocking it. He was on the Bills, and they were everybody's darling for the last few years. Oh, they're next. They're next. And he's seeing that it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, I feel like this team has a pretty good grasp on that, that if they end up going 9-8 this year, which would be a disappointment, it'll be because it turns out they just weren't good enough in certain spots, and they're going against a gauntlet of a schedule, not that... Oh, man, they had five games where they just didn't show up for them. You know what I mean?
I love Greg Popovich's term for it, and maybe he got it from somebody else, but he always talked about the appropriate level of fear. Yeah. That, you know, you got to always be finding that balance between confidence and fear. And, that's the constant quest, is just being sure your team has that appropriate level of fear.
All right, let's make sure we get at least one of each in before the end of the segment here. One more good thing and one more concern that you saw.
Okay, Xavier Hutchinson, because I don't think we spent enough time on him. The Xavier Hutchinson was exactly where he was supposed to be. He had solid and secure hands. It wasn't anything magnificent or anything, but just like Davis Mills, he was executing the offense. I think this is where one of the negatives is John Metchie. And, you know, immediately after the game, you're thinking, all right, well, he wasn't targeted a whole bunch, and they were for shorter routes. He had one drop, maybe broken up pass, whatever it was, and one little 5-yard reception.
Mm-hmm.
When I went back and watched all his routes, there is something to John Metchie where he hasn't quite translated this newfound speed and explosiveness. He's not transferring it over to scrimmage situations. And we saw that in practice to a certain degree. But I think that he doesn't create the separation. He doesn't run his routes with the same level of suddenness that you see at times when he's in individual drills. D'Amico was asked about what he saw from Metchie the other night.
Yeah, Metchie, he showed up during camp just playing really fast, playing decisive, and we've seen that during the first couple of weeks of camp. Just want to continue to see that, you know, in the game. where the game was yesterday. We'll see how he improves from to the next week. And that's a lot of guys, man. It's that first one out. It's all about, okay, this is your starting point. So I don't put a lot into the game. I just put a lot into how guys respond the next time, right? After we make the corrections, we show guys where they have to improve, whether it's, you know, a D-line position, receiver, every position across the board. It's like, how can guys improve upon what they put out there on film on yesterday? So I'm excited to look ahead to this next week and to see how all of our guys improve.
So that's where you are with Mechie. I think you've seen the glimpses of what he can do and how potentially he could run routes. But it's, it's very similar to playing one-on-one basketball versus playing on team basketball. There's things you can do on one-on-one. It's awesome. But if you can't do it in a team environment, yep, and you don't get into the flow of everything, you're not much good to that team, Jalen Green. And you've got to figure out exactly how to translate it into the team stuff. So I think that as they look at Mechie right now, they're looking at somebody that is like, okay, obviously he had that ordeal for 2 years that he was dealing with, and now he's physically recovered. But now he's got to run the offense, and he's got a few more games to show it. But I thought it was pretty clear in D'Amico there. I think he had the same appraisal of it that John Harris and I do, which is, yeah, there's some really good things in the first couple weeks of camp, but you got to put it on film in the game.
He's in way more of a dogfight than I have been given credit for in the first
Myself
10
too.
Practices.
Myself
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I got excited about watching the way he was moving,
yes,
and everything, and lost sight of the bigger picture.
Yeah. Like, if I even did choose one or the other right now, like if D'Amico said, hey, the league office calls and say, hey, you got to pick your roster today, and you're down to Xavier Hutchinson or John Mechie, I'm probably taking Xavier Hutchinson at this point.
Yeah.
But Mechie's still got plenty of time. People rooting
for him.
Well,
and Skoranek, too. I mean, you look at Skoranek. Skoranek is a guy that I think the quarterbacks trust him. That catch he made on the Davis Mills scramble ball, which was a very nice play by Davis Mills. But those guys trust Skoranek. They put the ball out there in camp and he reels it in.
Well, he contributes the most outside of just being a wide receiver out of all those guys too. You know, like he's
in terms of special teams.
Special teams and a little bit of position flexibility.
He's a very, very willing and capable blocker, which in this offense, these offensive
huge
coordinators really want that. Yep. It's not just lip service. They want their guys to be blockers.
All right. Andre Johnson goes into Canton. We're going to hear from Andre, the quiet kid that made it. Also, his salute to ownership as well. We'll hear, and the salute to the fans. If you missed the speech or you want to relive the highlights, this next segment coming up is for you. Stay there.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I really feel that in so many ways, Andre Johnson has taken the entire city of Houston with him to Canton, Ohio. Because he stayed here and stood the test of time and said, follow me, I will show you what it takes to win. Just stick with me and we'll get there. And I'll be darned, he got there.
I'll end off with this. I'm happy as hell again to be your first Pro Football Hall of Famer. Thank you.
That was Andre Johnson. Did a phenomenal job in Canton on Saturday, accepting his induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Here's Andre Johnson letting all those folks that helped raise him, takes a village, said the quiet kid from Miami, he made it. And then he acknowledged a lot of people.
And I want to thank them to know that that quiet kid, I made it. Whether it was a teacher, little league coach, or just someone in the neighborhood, they always pushed me to be great. Not just in football, but in life. My mother made a decision that changed everything for me. Even now, I still tell her, sending me out of my zone district to go to school to Miami High was a game changer.
Yeah. I mean, that was, and he talked extensively. His high school coach was there, very emotional in the audience. It was really cool.
Yeah, both at University of Miami and at Miami High School, he talked about just how the culture was one of guys pushing each other. And also, you know, especially at Miami High, I think he mentioned just the support the guys had. For me, it was impossible to not think about the Texans itself and just trying to create the kind of culture where you have something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the fact that he seemed so genuinely appreciative of the people and the environments that molded him, because it could have gone a million different ways. Yeah. You know, he could have grown up in some small town where he didn't see that example of what you could do,
mm-hmm.
Or just been on had a horrible high school coach, all those things. I think Andre's keenly aware of that and grateful for it. And it's more evidence of just who he is as a person. He's never been somebody that needed to heap the attention on himself or was even seeking attention in any regard, I think.
No, his speech was almost biographical because he hit every facet of his upbringing and his nurturing in football, high school, college, pro. He thanked the McNairs in his speech on Saturday.
I want to say thank you to Cal, Hannah, and the McNair family. You guys took a chance on me, a kid from Miami. Didn't know what was going to happen. I was coming to an expansion team. Never really had been out of Miami until I came to Houston, and I could call Houston home. But I thank you guys for taking that chance on me. I appreciate you.
That was cool. They focused in on the McNairs, who were sitting with Figgy, who will be jumping on the air with us in 11 minutes here on Sports Radio 610. He's hosting with John Lopez this week. I thought that was, you know, it's interesting, Seth, the thing he says there. I want to thank the McNairs for taking a chance on me. And I saw a lot of people like, how big a risk is Andre Johnson? He's a Hall of Famer. They didn't know that. Like, go look at the draft. There's a lot of third overall picks that wash out, you know?
Well, yeah, I think, I was actually doing that, looking at his draft class.
Yeah.
And where the Texans, so credit to Charlie Casserly. I mean, it was Carson Palmer in the first number one overall.
Yep.
Good pick. Then after that, you know, the Lions took Charles Rogers, a wide receiver who is clearly a better choice at wide receiver than Andre Johnson. But of the guys that went after him, some good players. I mean, like Dwayne Robertson, Terrence Newman. But then you get into, you know, Jonathan Sullivan, Byron Leftwich, Jordan Gross. Kevin Williams had a, you know, some good time. Terrell Suggs at 10 was like the first really, really notable guy that you got after Andre Johnson.
Yeah.
So it was, at the time, I think Andre was pretty much the presumed that's the guy you should take. But
oh, yeah.
They could have, teams have and would screw it up, like all the people that took somebody other than Terrell Suggs before.
Yes.
Between Andre
yes.
and him.
Yeah, nothing's automatic, man. Nothing's automatic at all. Here was Andre Johnson to the Texan fans in attendance on Saturday.
To the Houston Texan fans. Jim Porter asked me, if the Houston Texans were to get the game, how do you think the Houston fans would show up? I told him, you better get ready, because we're going to show up and show up. I'm so appreciative of you guys. You guys have shown me so much love from the day I came to Houston, even to now, just being around the city. I was walking in the store the other day. A lady I don't even know. She didn't say, hey, Andre. She didn't say anything. All she said was, I see you in Canton. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys so much. You guys meant so much to my career. You guys motivated me. And I couldn't do a lot of the things I did if I didn't have you guys cheering me on. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
There we go. Shout out to the fans. And the Texan fans did show up. Big time.
Yeah, they did. It was cool. And it's cool to see a lot of the familiar faces, like the hardcore face-painted ones that they've been wearing those same uniforms for 20 years. 20,
they have not changed their uniforms.
That's a lot of sweat and laundry cycles that they've put
we
through.
Hope.
Going hanging out and tailgating and like yes. in three-piece suits and face paint. That can't be pleasant.
Construction helmets and cowboy hats.
Intricate apparatus, headgear, all of that.
Paint, everything. Hey, speaking of which, I know Larry and Stafford was there in Canton on
big face paint guy
Saturday. Larry and Stafford, what's up, dude? How was it?
Hey, Sean, Seth, man, it was amazing, man. It, you know, as a diehard man and just someone who really loves the Texans and really love this city. Not only did the Houston Texans fans show up, but the McNairs and the whole organization, it was just first class, man, about everything we did up there in Canton. And just talking about Dre, I had the opportunity to be on the airplane on Continental Airlines with Dre. I think it may have been 2004 or something like that. It was right after his rookie year or whatever. And I sat next to him, man, and I was scared to death to talk to Andre Johnson because I had remembered, you know, watching him ball in that national championship game at the U, and he was just so quiet. And to this day, I've had the opportunity. I've met him at Benihana's. I've met him at other football camps. And he always has this same demeanor, like he hey, man, he's just mean or whatever. But it was just great to see him get to relax and just release and let everybody. When he kept saying, I'm happy as hell, we was all just like, yeah, Dre, we happy as hell too, because we can't tell if you're ready to fight everybody out here or you don't want to be bothered. But at least we know that you feeling the exact same. It was just amazing, man. And I'm telling y'all, when I was in Canton the whole time, just seeing Texan fans that excited about something that great that we hadn't experienced ever before in our history, man. It was just a wonderful thing to behold. I met Texas fans from all over the world, man. And I'm telling you, as God is my witness, when this team wins a Super Bowl, this city is going, if we do that up in Canton, son, this city is going to go absolutely crazy, because it's just something that is just being a part of something this big and seeing the McNairs recognize that and understand that, it was just great, man. I'm telling you, I had the time of my life. I got so many pictures, and then seeing all them boys that was on his squad, man, and all them red shirts and Ephraim Salam and Joel Dreesen and Eric Winston didn't even look like Eric Winston. I'm like, damn, who are all these dudes? But it was just fun, man, and I'm going to tell you, as somebody that really, really did not want to miss this, I am thankful that I was given an opportunity to really be there and be able to be a part of it. Because when we saw Dre come on that stage in that yellow jacket, man, it was almost like everybody in there just felt this magical experience happening. And I thank everybody from the city. I thank you guys, because I saw Figgy and showed them up there. It was just a time to be had, and that's how you do it when you're from the H. So, fellas, I'm back in the eighth and I feel good, but I'm going to have to recover from this one because it was a long 4 days for your boy and I.
We'll see you Sunday, Larry. Larry and Stafford, I know he'll be out there at that fan practice on Sunday evening at NRG Stadium. He echoed something you had said earlier in the show, Seth. Everybody's scared of Andre Johnson.
Yeah. No, there is. I mean, J.J. Watt said it. If you're feeling questionable about your manliness or something because you've been around Andre and you're kind of nervous around him, that's how J.J. Watt feels, though, too. So a little intimidated by him.
Yep.
Andre is like a mirror, man. Because he's so quiet, but he's so like imposing, but not in an aggressive way or anything. He's perfectly comfortable just being in a place without feeling, you know, any need or pressure to talk when he doesn't feel like there's something really important to talk about, that you do start to question, like, God, do I measure up? Is this what's going on here? Does he hate me? What's going on? Right. I don't know.
Man, it was cool to see on Saturday, man. Larry, we appreciate the phone call. Figgy is co-hosting with John Lopez on In the Loop today. They're both in here right now. And in this room, Figgy is the only one who was out there on Saturday.
Was.
Yeah, so you just heard Larry and Stafford call in, who, yeah, I'm sure you saw it looked like Larry saw everybody when he was up there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did his description of the whole event and just how amazing it was match your experience up there this weekend?
Yeah, man.
It looked like on TV you were having a great time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I was sitting with a couple billionaires.
We're going to talk about that.
No big deal.
We definitely going to talk about Cal and their kids.
Yeah. Something like
that. Cal, out, Hannah, Sean, and their kids.
Yeah.
I was sitting right behind one of the boys, or both of the boys.
Yeah, I saw that.
So every time I took a picture or something, they were right in the front.
Yeah.
Figgy, you might have to take Sean's mantle as the guy that the old three comma club.
I knew it.
You got three commas. I'm your guy.
I think he know more billionaires than me right now.
No, but you've been watching me work, man. My ability to sidle up to him. Yeah, no,
I'm trying to get up to Sean's level.
Learning from the goat. Yeah, yeah. It looked amazing. A-plus on his speech, I thought.
Oh, absolutely A-plus.
You've seen hundreds of Hall of Fame speeches, John Lopez. What'd you think?
I have. Well, this is how we're going to get into the show, and I want to mention it here with you guys. The best thing about his speech to me was it was him. Like it was like what Seth was just talking about. Like, even just standing up there, you're like, I hope he doesn't go off on anybody right now.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But at the same time, how do you not respect him anymore than you could? Like, it wasn't fancy. It wasn't like spinning stories. It was very straightforward, like Andre. It was thanking the right people, not missing a step. Like, everybody in his speech, he thanked properly. It was
perfection.
It was perfectly Andre.
I thought it was perfection. I tweeted right after. That was perfection. And he had the shortest speech out of everybody.
Yeah.
14 minutes and 18 seconds. That's timed perfection. Them all. Yeah. 14.
It was also good that the teleprompter went out and he just went on.
I agree. I thought it became a better speech.
I was impressed.
When the teleprompter
Because it went out.
Out
when right before he was talking about his mom.
Yeah.
And I thought he was probably getting choked up too.
Yeah.
But that was a long pause. I'm like, oh, here you go.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah.
And he went on. I didn't even realize it until afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get to see Kikuchi on Friday?
We did.
It was like the only good thing that happened with the Astros.
The first
and everybody's inning, all upset about is the only good thing that happened.
Yeah, the first inning, I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
And then.
Not like this. Yeah, not the not exact like way this. That not I like feared that it would go. Yeah.
Five pitches in.
Felt like you were like walking up to the guillotine and be like, oh, it's exactly what I feared.
And it's up there, and it's definitely going to chop my neck off. That's funny. All right. So we are done. We are about out of time. So you guys got plenty on the docket today to get to.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah,
and the Texans are practicing right now.
Right as we speak. Yeah.
At the university school.
Yeah.
Ontario's old alma mater. That's on 100 wooded acres in northeastern Ohio.
I've been seeing the images of it, man. This thing looks like it's out in the middle of nowhere.
I did a deep dive. You should see their webpage.
Really?
They got facilities, man.
Okay.
They got
facilities.
Does Nick have his name on any of them?
I don't know. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I tried to enroll as a student. I want to have that experience.
48. All right. We are finished. John Lopez, Figgy Fig. Chris Santiago is on the ones and twos in there. So that's your lineup on In the Loop today. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2, an Odyssey station. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and good tidings to you, Sean.
Thank you, sir. I will see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow. In the Loop starts. Yeah, tomorrow. We're coming back.
All right.
As far as I know.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I really feel that in so many ways, Andre Johnson has taken the entire city of Houston with him to Canton, Ohio. Because he stayed here and stood the test of time and said, follow me, I will show you what it takes to win. Just stick with me and we'll get there. And I'll be darned, he got there.
I'll end off with this. I'm happy as hell again to be your first Pro Football Hall of Famer. Thank you.
That was Andre Johnson. Did a phenomenal job in Canton on Saturday, accepting his induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Here's Andre Johnson letting all those folks that helped raise him, takes a village, said the quiet kid from Miami, he made it. And then he acknowledged a lot of people.
And I want to thank them to know that quiet kid, I made it. Whether it was a teacher, little league coach, or just someone in the neighborhood, they always pushed me to be great. Not just in football, but in life. My mother made a decision that changed everything for me. Even now, I still tell her, sending me out of my zone district to go to school to Miami High was a game changer.
Yeah. I mean, he talked extensively. His high school coach was there, very emotional in the audience. It was really cool.
Yeah, both at University of Miami and at Miami High School, he talked about just how the culture was one of guys pushing each other. And also, especially at Miami High, I think he mentioned just the support the guys had. And it, like it, for me, it was impossible to not think about the Texans itself and just trying to create the kind of culture where you have something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the fact that he seemed so genuinely appreciative of the people and the environments that molded him, because it could have gone a million different ways. Yeah. You know, he could have grown up in some small town where he didn't see that example of what you could do,
mm-hmm.
Or just been on had a horrible high school coach, all those things. I think Andre's keenly aware of that and grateful for it. And it's more evidence of just who he is as a person. He's never been somebody that needed to heap the attention on himself or was even seeking attention in any regard, I think.
No, his speech was almost biographical because he hit every facet of his upbringing and his nurturing in football, high school, college, pro. He thanked the McNairs in his speech on Saturday.
I want to say thank you to Cal, Hannah, and the McNair family. You guys took a chance on me, a kid from Miami. Didn't know what was going to happen. I was coming to an expansion team. Never really had been out of Miami until I came to Houston, and I could call Houston home. But I thank you guys for taking that chance on me. I appreciate you.
That was cool. They focused in on the McNairs, who were sitting with Figgy, who will be jumping on the air with us in 11 minutes here on Sports Radio 610. He's hosting with John Lopez this week. I thought that was, you know, it's interesting, Seth, the thing he says there. I want to thank the McNairs for taking a chance on me. And I saw a lot of people like, how big a risk is Andre Johnson? He's a Hall of Famer. They didn't know that. Like, go look at the draft. There's a lot of third overall picks that wash out, you know?
Well, yeah, I think, I was actually doing that, looking at his draft class.
Yeah.
And where the Texans, so credit to Charlie Casserly. I mean, it was Carson Palmer in the first number one overall.
Yep.
Good pick. Then after that, you know, the Lions took Charles Rogers, a wide receiver who was clearly a better choice at wide receiver than Andre Johnson. But of the guys that went after him, some good players. I mean, like Dwayne Robertson, Terrence Newman. But then you get into, you know, Jonathan Sullivan, Byron Leftwich, Jordan Gross, Kevin Williams had a, you know, some good time. Terrell Suggs at 10 was like the first really, really notable guy that you got after Andre Johnson.
Yeah.
So it was, at the time, I think Andre was pretty much the presumed that's the guy you should take. They could have, teams have and would screw it up, like all the people that took somebody other than Terrell Suggs before.
Yes.
Between Andre
yes.
and him.
Yeah, nothing's automatic, man. Nothing's automatic at all. Here was Andre Johnson to the Texan fans in attendance on Saturday.
To the Houston Texan fans. Jim Porter asked me, if the Houston Texans were to get the game, how do you think the Houston fans would show up? I told him, you better get ready, because we're going to show up and show out. I'm so appreciative of you guys. You guys have shown me so much love from the day I came to Houston, even to now, just being around the city. I was walking in the store the other day. A lady I don't even know. She didn't say, hey, Andre. She didn't say anything. All she said was, I see you in Canton. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys so much. You guys meant so much to my career. You guys motivated me. And I couldn't do a lot of things I did if I didn't have you guys cheering me on. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
There we go. Shout out to the fans. And the Texan fans did show up. Big time.
Yeah, they did. It was cool. And it's cool to see a lot of the familiar faces, like the hardcore face-painted ones that they've been wearing those same uniforms for 20 years. 20,
they have not changed their uniforms.
That's a lot of sweat and laundry cycles that they've put
we
through.
Hope.
Going hanging out and tailgating and like yes. in three-piece suits and face paint. That can't be pleasant.
Construction helmets and cowboy hats.
Intricate apparatus, headgear, all of that.
Paint, everything. Hey, speaking of which, I know Larry and Stafford was there in Canton on
big face paint guy
Saturday. Larry and Stafford, what's up, dude? How was it?
Hey, Sean, Seth, man, it was amazing, man. It, you know, as a diehard man and just someone who really loves the Texans and really love this city. Not only did the Houston Texans fans show up, but the McNairs and the whole organization, it was just first class, man, about everything we did up there in Canton. And just talking about Dre, I had the opportunity to be on the airplane on Continental Airlines with Dre. I think it may have been 2004 or something like that. It was right after his rookie year or whatever. And I sat next to him, man, and I was scared to death to talk to Andre Johnson because I had remembered, you know, watching him ball in that national championship game at the U, and he was just so quiet. And to this day, I've had the opportunity. I met him at Benihana's. I've met him at other football camps, and he always has this same demeanor, like he, hey man, he's just mean or whatever. But it was just great to see him get to relax and just release and let everybody. When he kept saying, "I'm happy as hell," we was all just like, "Yeah, Dre, we happy as hell too," because we can't tell if you're ready to fight everybody out here or you don't want to be bothered. But at least we know that you feel the exact same. It was just amazing, man. And I'm telling y'all, when I was in Canton the whole time, just seeing Texan fans that excited about something that great that we hadn't experienced ever before in our history, man, it was just a wonderful thing to behold. I met Texan fans from all over the world, man. Man, I'm telling you, as God is my witness, when this team wins a Super Bowl, this city is going, if we do that up in Canton, son, this city is going to go absolutely crazy because it's just something that is just being a part of something this big and seeing the McNairs recognize that and understand that, it was just great, man. I'm telling you, I had the time of my life. I got so many pictures, and then seeing all them boys that was on his squad, man, and all them red shirts and Ephraim Salam and Joel Dreesen and Eric Winston didn't even look like Eric Winston. I'm like, damn, who are all these dudes? But it was just fun, man. And I'm going to tell you, as somebody that really, really did not want to miss this, I am thankful that I was given the opportunity to really be there and be able to be a part of it. Because when we saw Dre come on that stage in that yellow jacket, man, it was almost like everybody in there just felt this magical experience happening. And I thank everybody from the city. I thank you guys because I saw Figgy and showed them up there. It was just a time to be had, and that's how you do it when you're from the H. So, fellas, I'm back in the H, and I feel good, but I'm going to have to recover from this because it was a long 4 days for your boy. And
We'll see you Sunday, Larry. Larry and Stafford, I know he'll be out there at that fan practice on Sunday evening at NRG Stadium. He echoed something you had said earlier in the show, Seth. Everybody's scared of Andre Johnson.
Yeah. No, there is. I mean, J.J. Watt said it. If you're feeling questionable about your manliness or something because you've been around Andre and you're kind of nervous around him, that's how J.J. Watt feels, though, too. He's a little intimidated by him.
Yep.
Andre is like a mirror, man. Because he's so quiet, but he's so like imposing, but not in an aggressive way or anything. He's perfectly comfortable just being in a place without feeling, you know, any need or pressure to talk when he doesn't feel like there's something really important to talk about, that you do start to question, like, God, do I measure up? Is this what's going on here? Does he hate me? What's going on? Right. I don't know.
Man, it was cool to see on Saturday, man. Larry, we appreciate the phone call. Figgy is co-hosting with John Lopez on In the Loop today. They're both in here right now. And in this room, Figgy is the only one who was out there on Saturday.
Was.
Yeah, so you just heard Larry and Stafford call in, who I'm sure you saw it looked like Larry saw everybody when he was up there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did his description of the whole event and just how amazing it was match your experience up there this weekend?
Yeah, man.
It looked like on TV you were having a great time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I was sitting with a couple billionaires.
We're going to talk about that.
No big deal.
We definitely going to talk about Cal and their kids.
Yeah. Something like
Cal, out, Hannah, Sean. And their kids.
Yeah.
I was sitting right behind one of the boys or both of the boys.
Yeah, I saw that.
So
saw that.
Every time I took a picture of something, they were right in the front.
Yeah.
Figgy, you might have to take Sean's mantle as the guy that the old three comma club.
I knew it.
You got three commas. I'm your guy.
Hey man.
I think he know more billionaires than me right now.
No, but you've been watching me work, man. My ability to sidle up to him. Yeah, no.
I'm trying to get up to Sean's level.
Learning from the goat. Yeah. Yeah. It looked amazing. A-plus on his speech, I thought.
Oh, absolutely A-plus.
You've seen hundreds of Hall of Fame speeches, John Lopez. What'd you think?
I have. Well, this is how we're going to get into the show, and I want to mention it here with you guys. The best thing about his speech to me was it was him. Like it was like what Seth was just talking about. Like, even just standing up there, you're like, I hope he doesn't go off on anybody right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, how do you not respect him anymore than you could? Like, it wasn't fancy. It wasn't like spinning stories. It was very straightforward, like Andre. It was thanking the right people, not missing a step. Like, everybody in his speech, he thanked properly. It was
perfection.
It was perfectly Andre.
I thought it was perfection. I tweeted right after. That was perfection. And he had the shortest speech out of everybody.
Yeah.
14 minutes and 18 seconds. That's timed perfection. Them all. Yeah. 14.
It was also good that the teleprompter went out and he just went on.
I agree. I thought it became a better speech.
I was impressed.
When the teleprompter
Because it went out when right before he was talking about his mom.
Yeah.
And I thought he was probably getting choked up too.
Yeah.
But that was a long pause. I'm like, oh, here you go.
Yeah.
And he went on. I didn't even realize it until afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get to see Kikuchi on Friday?
We did.
It was like the only good thing that happened with the Astros.
The first inning,
everybody's all upset about is the only good thing that happened.
Yeah, the first inning, I was like, boy.
Yeah.
And then.
Not like this. Yeah, not the exact way that I feared that it would go. Yeah.
Five pitches in. Five pitches.
Felt like you were like walking up to the guillotine and be like, oh, it's exactly what I feared.
And it's up there, and it's definitely going to chop my neck off. That's funny. All right. So we are done. We are about out of time. So you guys got plenty on the docket today to get to.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah,
and the Texans are practicing right now.
Right as we speak. Yeah.
At the university school.
Yeah.
Rosario's old alma mater. That's on 100 wooded acres in northeastern Ohio.
I've been seeing the images of it, man. This thing looks like it's out in the middle of nowhere.
I did a deep dive. You should see their webpage.
Really?
They got facilities, man.
Okay.
They got facilities.
Does Nick have his name on any of them?
I don't know. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I tried to enroll as a student. I want to have that experience.
48. All right. We are finished. John Lopez, Figgy Fig. Chris Santiago is on the ones and twos in there. So that's your lineup on In the Loop today. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2, an Odyssey station. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and good tidings to you, Sean.
Thank you, sir. I will see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow. In the Loop starts. Yeah, tomorrow. We're coming back.
All right.
As far as I know.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.